In Lake City, South Carolina, in 1898, an African-American man named Frazier Baker was appointed postmaster by President William McKinley. Baker traveled to Lake City with his wife and his six children. Dr. Faustina Baker is Frazier's grandniece, and she says that the white residents of the town lashed out with violence, angry that a black man had been appointed postmaster.
Once Frazier got to his post, the first thing that happened was he was shot, but not fatally or seriously wounded while leaving the post office one evening. And the second situation was the post office where he was assigned was demolished by fire. After that time, it was necessary for him to find another location. So he got assistance from a black United Methodist church, and it was a one room, and he divided that property for living purposes as well as the postal services that he provided to the Lake City inhabitants.
But not long after, a mob of white people from the town showed up to the Baker's new home.
They came to the home about 1 a.m. The house was quiet. Everyone was asleep. And the eldest child, Rosa, said that she was awakened by the roaring of the fire. And then, as she jumped up, her father, Frazier, followed, and he realized that he was in a position where there was shooting and burning at the same time. He said to his wife, "We may as well die running as standing still." So she grabbed Julia in her arms, a 23-month-old, and they headed for the door. They shot Frazier first. He fell, and after that, the mob continued to shoot into the house, and Lavinia, the wife, and the five children escaped.
There was a trial for the murder of Frazier Baker and his infant daughter, Julia, but no one was found guilty. Dr. Faustina Baker says that the history of their lynching is still ingrained in Lake City's DNA.
I've looked at the surnames of the persons that were listed in the mob, and there are many names in the Lake City area that still reside there. But the interesting thing is, no one seems to know anything about the Frazier Baker story. If you tell them, they say, "I never heard that. Frazier Baker gave up his life working for the federal government, the 21 days in February of 1898 where he worked, and they never received any pension for the wife and the five children." There were other things going on in the country at that time that the president was very lucrative in giving to the community. But when it came to Frazier Baker, there was just no recognition at all, as though he never existed.
Frazier Baker and his daughter Julia are two of more than 4,400 black Americans who are known to be the victims of racially motivated lynchings in this country. And many of their descendants share Dr. Baker's feelings. With little official recognition, it feels like they never existed. I'm Todd Zwillick, and this is The Takeaway.
Barren, strange fruit. Blood on the leaves. Blood at the roots. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze.
We begin at the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. It's a new monument opening today in Montgomery, Alabama, to commemorate the victims of lynching in America. One central piece of that commemoration is art.
My name is Dana King. I'm a sculptor based in Oakland, California. and the artist who created Guided by Justice for the Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama.
Dana King's sculpture of three women sits just outside the memorial. The heavy brown monoliths of the pavilion hang nearby as the women walk past on their way to somewhere else.
These women represent the women who walked during the Montgomery bus boycott. They walked every day, rain, shine, super hot in the summertime in Montgomery, and cold, actually bone-chilling cold in the wintertime. And they did it every day. I think my sculpture is like a trinity of quiet activism. These women shut down the bus company. Actually, all the walkers shut down the bus company. And they were unified in a way that I don't know that we can be unified today, which makes me sad. But hopefully this sculpture will inspire people with the understanding of what people went through and the sacrifices they made. As simple as not taking the bus was a huge sacrifice because they took the bus everywhere, to the doctor's office, to work, to the grocery store, to church. And these people said, no, we're done. We've had enough. And that changed the direction of the civil rights movement back in 1955. So these women are walking. One is going to the doctor. She's pregnant. And one is a teacher off to teach the babies. And one is a grandmother off to take care of the babies. They're all independent women. But they're unified in this goal. And the elderly woman is my great-grandmother, who was enslaved. Our family has one photograph of her. The teacher is my Aunt Tiny, who was a teacher and a principal in the segregated South. And the pregnant woman is a very special woman who's carrying a very special baby. And they're off in their quiet way to stop injustice.
I noticed that as these three women walk, the grandmother, the older woman, she's in the lead. She's first.
Yes, as well she should be, because those of us who are African-American are connected to slavery in some way. And mine is direct. And it was important for me to honor that time in American history. She's our elder, and we should revere them. And so she should lead the way.
The other person depicted as the teacher, standing just a little bit behind, you said, is your aunt, right? A teacher in the segregated South.
Tiny. She's not a tiny woman. But that's the way with nicknames, right? But she was a proper woman. She made her own clothing. I never saw my Aunt Tiny without a dress on. I never saw her in pants. And she was a fierce advocate for education. The activism, that quiet activism of all those women, is we give birth to the children. We teach the children who they are and where they come from and how they need to lead. And we take care of them. We nurture them. We love them. Yes, we work and quietly go about our lives, but our activism is directly attached to the children and the next generation. Because where we come from is just in our DNA. Generation through generation through generation, we are attached to our history.
The women in your sculpture, which is just outside of the memorial itself, sort of alongside it on a path, they're walking by the lynched people represented in that memorial or walking away from them or alongside them, I'm not sure. And I wonder how you view the topography of how this is laid out, the women in your work in their relation to the many thousands of people represented having been lynched in the American South.
Montgomery itself is the cradle of the Confederacy, and it's this iconic civil rights city where modern civil rights took off from the bus boycott. And the people who were lynched, from my point of view, have never been released from that until now, because we've never identified them en masse. You might come across a story here and there, but to see physically the embodiment of 4,400 people, is overwhelming. So these are our ghosts. And we've been walking by our ghosts forever. But now those ghosts, in seeing their names and speaking their names, are released. They're free. That's the juxtaposition for me, is that we all have been walking by our ghosts. And whether we recognized it or not, didn't matter. It just was. It is. And these women and men and children who walked during the boycott worked to release them.
How's that process going, in your view, Dana? I mean, the women depicted in your work, the memorial itself, are all part of our collective reckoning with our history. Of course, the memorials and the statues are the least important part of that. The most important part is the actual learning and the actual progress, right? The actual reckoning. How's that part going, in your view?
It's slow. But until now, it's been an individualized learning, and now we can talk about this. Now we have proof, we have evidence. Not that we didn't before, but now it's been collected. This proprietary information is collected, and it's located in one space. And there's no denying the impact of it. There's no denying the power of it and the influence of it. And now we can talk about it. Now we have to talk about it. We can't go backwards from here. We can only move forwards. And I think that that's exactly what this memorial does. It helps us, it propels us forward. And it's a hard, hard learning. it's a soulful learning. It's a heartbreaking learning. But it's a learning that we have to undertake nonetheless.
Dana King is a sculptor and the creator of Guided by Justice, just one part of the Memorial for Peace and Justice. Dana King, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Todd.
My name is Damani, calling from Brooklyn. Through generations, as an African-American, my parents and their parents were all from the South, and generation after generation, lynching has always been a deterrent to keep the African-American population and community as a whole in fear so that there was no pursuit of equality or justice. I'm happy that finally there is a memorial that's going up to embrace those lives that were lost through this heinous act of hatred.
The National Memorial for Peace and Justice opens today in Montgomery, Alabama. You can visit thetakeaway.org to see photos of the monument and for information on how to visit.
Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.